Chapter 4, Half Moon Bay. I wrote this story to come to terms with changes in a geographic landscape that had long been special to me. Although I began by focusing on physical changes, I soon found that my journey down the California coast took me back to the past, where inner emotional scenes were more important than changes wrought by others or by time. Less than an hour from my house is a town called Half Moon Bay, where a broad sweep of white sand beach, shaped like a sliver of a half moon, gently embraces a cove of blue sea. When the fog lifts, the sun shines through, glinting off the glassy blue-green water and the warm, inviting beach, producing a feeling of peacefulness. Half Moon Bay is the name of the bay and of the town. But for me, it really means a direction, a place of mind and heart. It means a drive down along the coast to an area that is centered on Half Moon Bay, but that lies mostly north and south of it. Often, I have driven a route that goes first through Pacifica, where the sky opens out over the ocean, then to Mantara, that broad beach just past the rocky cliffs of Devil's Slide, where cars sometimes fall to the sea and rocks sometimes fall from above, causing the road to be closed down. I pass nurseries and smell the fertilizer used on the fields of Brussels sprouts, and I stop only sometimes at Half Moon Bay, a town once full of farmers and old people in trailers, and now full of families and professional people and condos and jumbo homes. On the main street of Half Moon Bay, more and more are pricey shops where tourists go. I remember Half Moon Bay from a time when there was almost no downtown and no reason to stop there. I drive farther on to San Gregorio and Pescadero, where the beaches seem to extend forever, backed by high, tan sandstone cliffs. I feel totally alone when walking the beach here in the fog, caught between the cliffs and the sea. I sometimes drive farther to Año Nuevo, a piece of shrubby, overgrown land that juts out into the ocean. Elephant seals come ashore here to molt and breed and are visible farther out at sea, hanging out of the windows of a deserted house on an abandoned island. Sometimes I drive as far south as Davenport, a cement factory town that's ashen gray beside the green sea, and where an organic juice factory operates at night with eerie orange and blue lights on. It stands high on a cliff beside the sea, looking out into nowhere. I have been driving this section of the coast, walking the beaches and visiting the forested state parks farther inland, for 23 years now. Often I go quite regularly. I have gone on my birthday, on Thanksgiving, on weekdays and weekends, at all hours of the day and night. Even when living halfway across the country, I have come back here to visit, always feeling that when I reach the ocean, I will know what my pulse is. I will know how I feel. I will be in touch with my own inner freedom. Yet in recent years, my drive along this coast has troubled me. I have difficulty with the changes in the landscape, the new houses, the many more people. Seeing them, I feel erased, that time has passed me by, that violence has been done to me, and to what is mine, or to what used to be mine. For this coast is not really mine any longer. It belongs to other people who are making it theirs. As I drive now, I try to see the beauty of the shoreline amidst the new jumbo homes they have built on the hillsides, amidst the commuter traffic across Route 92, the one main road that links this part of the coast to the nearest inland freeway, amidst the mothers and kids playing on the once empty beaches, amidst the condos and the crowds come to see the elephant seals at Año Nuevo. I stop at San Gregorio at a coastside store and see the shaggy-haired young men hanging out at the bar, talking about the tunnel that could be built through the hills to further link this coast to civilization, talking about real estate and part-time jobs, clearing lots and building houses. They talk while the country music plays on the bar stereo, and it's yesterday's country music in a revamped old country store, and the bar's on one side of a big wood-floored room, and they are listening to the Eagles' peaceful, easy feeling. The nostalgia is thick here, the irony hard to miss. What's peaceful? Who's easy? Whose place is this? I see the cars pulled up in the small town of Pescadero at a brown wood-shingled restaurant where it used to be only locals and beat-up hippie types came. People tired from a day at the beach, young people in jeans and full of sand who had been camping, men who had been out working coming in for morning coffee. I see the BMWs, Jaguars, and Lexuses that are now parked routinely in front of the restaurant, and the women customers in jewelry and neat clothes inside sitting at the tables. The food seems much the same, though it's probably better. Artichoke soup, greasy seafood, or it used to be greasy, fresh bread. I sit at the gray formica-topped counter near the kitchen, sip my soup, and try to feel again as I once did the very first time I came here, the first time I was offered artichoke soup. I look around at the people in the pine-paneled restaurant, and I see in my mind my coast being gobbled up more and more each year, being overrun, and I feel I have nowhere to turn. As I drive on, close to tears, I try to ignore these people with their new wealth, these people who I feel don't belong, who are making this area theirs and changing it in the process, who make assumptions about what they can do, that they can choose to live here, for instance, a choice I never felt I could make. It was not where my job was. It was too far away. It was part of the countryside, a place to visit, to appropriate in my fantasy, in my play life, my imagination, but not to appropriate in fact, not to build a house in, to live in permanently, not to use in that way. But that is what they've done. They have made it into a lifestyle choice. Each time I hear of someone who has moved to Half Moon Bay, I cringe. I feel hurt, angry, pained, and confused. I feel they shouldn't. It's not right. I couldn't. On my drive now, I find I must focus through my own pain and resentment in order to see the sun glinting on the water and the roll of the hills. I focus my vision narrowly to avoid seeing the large, boxy houses, the invasion of the new people. But then my own past also keeps invading, inserting itself into my vision. My trip is littered with my own inner memories, as well as with the outer structures of others. I did not always come to this coast. At first, I was afraid to come here. From where I lived inland, the ride took me over expanses of hills on winding roads. I would get dizzy and lose my bearings. Then the lush green valley and wide hills of San Gregorio would open out, and I could see the sea. The first woman who took me here raised my fears. For her, the true experience of the coast was a wilderness experience and too wild for me. She always seemed to be pointing to something beyond me, something I could not do or be. When I was with her, I often felt inadequate. I felt alone and afraid, and not brave enough or sturdy enough to walk the beach. But I do remember a walk on the beach at Pescadero with her in the fog, once when I was not scared. That was after we parted. Only after our relationship was over was I able to feel more relaxed about this coast. My next lover treated these beaches like home. She had been married on one of the beaches down toward Año Nuevo. I always imagined it was a hippie wedding with women in long dresses and people bringing food in baskets. She thought nothing of coming over here at night in the dark, on impulse, driving the winding roads quickly through the hills. The darkness and the speed frightened me. She was the one who first took me to the restaurant in Pescadero and told me that people came for the artichoke soup and the pies. She made coming to these beaches seem normal and natural for me, like an ordinary part of life. Other people I knew back then, who worked at the bookstore where I did an hour inland, often came over to the beaches too, when someone was missing from the bookstore because they had broken up or just were moody, they were probably out here. That bookstore group was a community. When I moved to the Midwest the next year, my mailing address for a while was in El Granada, a town just north of Half Moon Bay, care of a man I knew from the bookstore who lived in Menlo Park, but who took his mail over here because he had friends here. When I drive the coast now, I am often back in those earlier times. As I near San Gregorio, I remember that some people from the bookstore later bought half the ownership in the San Gregorio Country Store, which is why it stocks lots of books. I often stop by the San Gregorio store and go in and look sideways for people I once knew, wanting not to be recognized by them, but wanting to see that part of my past is still there. The last time I was in, I stood in the back in an aisle surrounded by tall wooden shelves full of cowboy clothing and enameled metal cookware, and I overheard one of the owners up front. He was talking with a woman at the bar about taking a vacation in Ireland and other international trips. It was a far cry from the old bookstore culture of low-paid clerks who went to the local beaches. I am saying that this coast is full of contradictions for me. It was not always what it is for me now. It never really was an ideal. It used to be unfamiliar. It scared me, belonged to other people, was foggy, windy, and far away, and a challenge. Gradually, I began making it mine through many visits back. On each trip, I came here as if to find out what was true and good in my life. When I was first getting to know the woman I have lived with now for 16 years, our first daytime date was a trip to the ocean where we had lunch and threw a frisbee. It mattered a great deal to us to find that we each liked the beach. On our ride back, we waited for a long time for gas at a pump beside a coastside restaurant with large blue windows facing toward the sea. That restaurant is gone now, but in my mind I see it clearly, and I see a pink and gray decorated hippie school bus that was parked in front of us for that long half hour while we waited. My younger brother made this coast his, too. I found out only after his death that his favorite place to go in the whole world was the small flat town of Pescadero. I often imagine him there still, walking around with his camera. He liked to take pictures of nothing happening, of small-town Americana, of empty tables set with old silverware and thick round plates in all-night restaurants, of the plain things in life, always in black and white. My brother died 11 years ago. His death was a probable suicide. He was hit by a train. Last winter, to mark the date of his death, he died on a Monday after Thanksgiving. The Tuesday after, I drove down to Pescadero. I wanted to walk through the flat town with its few grid streets and see what my brother once saw and liked, then have lunch at the brown-shingled Pescadero restaurant. Sit at the counter, order soup, and think about my brother. I wanted his death not to be in vain. But I thought I would stop first at the Pescadero Marsh, a wildlife preserve just off the coast highway near the town. I had heard there were wintering birds there. I doubted my brother had been to the marsh, but I wanted to see the birds, and I went because I have found the places where birds live to be reassuring, tranquil, overlooked, out-of-the-way natural places, especially the low wetlands. I had never been to the Pescadero Marsh before, and I was anxious about my trip down. Would there be birds? Would the coast be beautiful? Would it be too much changed? Would thinking about my brother upset me? How much of my past would come flooding back to me this time? Those old lovers on the beaches, the time I collected sand dollars on the beach before moving to the Southwest. I had thought I would take one as a present to the woman I was going to stay with in Albuquerque while finding a place to live. I never gave it to her, but I did drive cross-country with that sand dollar in the front seat of my car, reminding me of where I came from. It was a foggy morning and an overcast day as I drove down the coast highway to remember my brother. The fog lifted as I neared the marsh. I parked my car in a beach parking lot and walked along the shore. The wind was severe. The ocean was a deep blue with many white-capped waves. I walked on the beach for a long time, then climbed over driftwood, under a bridge, over large rocks, up through ice plant and sand dunes covered with scrubby green vegetation. Then I paused and looked back at the bridge over the inlet to the marsh and remembered when that bridge was a narrow, flat, wooden bridge rather than the large, arching concrete structure I saw now. I remembered a Sunday morning 20 years ago when I came here and the sun was very warm and I felt alone but very good. I had walked the beach until I reached the driftwood, then turned back. I think I felt good because there was a woman I was looking forward to being close with at that time, although it did not work out in the end. I now climbed to the top of a sand dune and looked inland toward a broad wooded hillside in the distance that seemed to bound the marsh on the inland edge. The marsh that spread out before me seemed just a mass of low-lying reeds, dirt, some trees, patches of still water, and a larger, more open pond farther back. I began to walk along a path leading deeper into the marsh toward the hillside. The ocean, the highway, the bridge, all receded behind me. The air became quite still, but it was very noisy. The racket was caused, I soon gathered, by thousands of ducks, black, green, brown, yellow, moving about amongst the tall brown and green rushes and the waterways. The ducks took to the air, frightened, and flew away when I stepped near them. I saw egrets, large white birds with broad flapping wings that make them look like angels as they fly. This marsh was teeming with life. I stood and watched, fascinated. I had never known there was a marsh here. I had seen a pond to the side of the highway, but for 20 years I had ignored it and simply walked on the beach from one end to the other and back. I never thought going inland would be worth it. Now I wondered what all the ducks were doing here. I thought there were probably people who could tell the different kinds of ducks from one another. I wished I was one of those people. I wanted more big birds, herons and egrets, and fewer ducks, for the big birds were more dramatic and easier for me to see. But the point was that I was now engaged debating my past less than which birds I liked. I walked farther into the marsh and was amazed at the extent of it. Half of Pescadero, it seemed to me, was taken up by this marsh. It was set in a broad basin between the sea and the town. It was big enough so that small boats moved around on parts of it farther from me, although near me no boats were allowed, only the reeds and birds. This was another world, wild, protected, a sanctuary full of clattering ducks, with paths for people overgrown with brush, an occasional bench, signs saying to keep off the regrowing vegetation. Eucalyptus trees seemed to emerge from the bog as I walked. Poison oak was everywhere, along with those tall brown reeds in which were hidden so many kinds of birds. I walked farther in on the path and saw standing near me a great blue heron with a dignified gray body and long legs. I stared at it through my binoculars for some time, and it stared at me. I felt I had found a special place where I could go. I thought my brother had not been here, that he had only been in town, although I did not really know. But this marsh seemed too unruly for him, too noisy. I imagined him where it was quiet. This was my place. I was the only one here. I started to get very warm, and suddenly I felt very tired. An hour and a half after I had come, I walked out of the Pescadero marsh. I climbed over the dunes under the bridge and walked back along the beach to my car. Then I drove into the tiny town of Pescadero, as I had planned. I had lunch, soup and bread, in the by now nearly empty restaurant, with its pine-paneled walls and its glowing formica counter. Then I took a walk through the flat streets of my brother's town. I did not know exactly where he had gone or what he had liked, and I felt frustrated that I could not know. As I walked, I kept looking around, wondering what he had seen. I passed an elementary school. He liked small kids. Maybe he liked that school. I passed small, square wooden houses set back in deep front yards that were planted with a few flowers and spread with children's playthings or odd statuary. The landscape was very flat, the scale low. I passed a blacksmith's shop in a dark, weathered barn-like building. I began feeling that I was invading other people's worlds, and when I kept failing to know what my brother saw, I headed back. The sky was clouding over. Then, on impulse, I turned down a side street where I saw a small old graveyard on a grassy hillside. Thin white tombstones sat gently behind a low wrought-iron fence. I thought my brother must have gone there. He liked things like graveyards. I had always wanted to tell him to go to Colma and Daly City, the graveyard capital of this area, where the rolling hills are full of tombs for miles. I thought he'd enjoy walking around there, but I never had told him. I turned back without going into the delicate Pescadero Cemetery or walking around among the plaques. I continued back to the commercial street of town, bought a loaf of sourdough bread in a grocery, a jar of olive berry jam in the restaurant, and started home. As I drove out toward the main coast highway, I passed the basin where the Pescadero Marsh lay. I knew it was there, but it was hardly distinguishable. A couple of months later, I took my lover down with me to see the marsh. We parked by the beach, climbed under the bridge and over the dunes, and reached the path where the reeds and wetlands stretched out before us. But the marsh was silent. There were no ducks. There was no overwhelming clatter. No birds flew away as soon as I stepped near them. The sky was blue, the feeling peaceful but invigorating. It was a beautiful but quiet, empty marsh that day. What I had seen a mere 2 months earlier was no longer there. How easy it is to miss the noise of those quiet places. I tried to explain, to tell my lover what was missing, but really it was missing only for me. No marsh, no tree will ever be what it once was. No lost brother regained. These things are hard to share. Yet that boisterous marsh is there. The coast around Half Moon Bay stretches long and uninterrupted by the sea. My brother, who liked all-night restaurants and who lured me down to Pescadero to take a look around again, is still very present in my mind.